Well, welcome to Consumer Talk, and today's segment all about honey as we meet, or re-meet, I should say, a guest who is arguably this country's biggest honey connoisseur. We're going to revisit also some of the darker sides of the industry. We're going to talk again about issues like selling honey-flavoured syrup and pretending that it's honey. We're going to talk about fudging the detail on where the honey in the bottle is coming from, amongst other issues. So just an invitation for starters that if you want to join the conversation or ask a question or make a comment, you're very welcome to send a WhatsApp to 072-567-1567 or to give us a call on 021-446-0567. You're also, of course, welcome to tweet or X me at PJC Hudson. Wendy, great to have you back with us. And it's also lovely to welcome back our guest who represents the much sweeter side of today's conversation. Won't you do the honours and formally introduce her, please?
Yes, of course, with pleasure. So with us is Natasha Lyon, as in L-Y-O-N, who is Fourways based, Johannesburg for now. And she is a beekeeper, a bee guardian, founder of the Lyon Raw Artisan Honey, and South Africa's first internationally trained honey sommelier. She's going to treat us to a honey tasting and also share with us her intention to use her certification to encourage beekeepers and small-scale producers to share their stories and botanical footprint with their consumers in order to firmly place South African honeys on the international honey stage where they clearly belong.
It's fabulous to have you back again, Natasha. Welcome. It's been way too long.
Thank you, Pippa. It's wonderful to be here.
And congratulations on all of your success in this industry. Why don't you start just by telling us a little bit more about this big dream that you have of using your passion as a way to put South Africa on the international honey map, if we can put it that way.
Yes, I think I need to start by saying it really is a collective effort by the whole industry. And in October last year, our honeys competed through the Western Cape Beekeeping Association on a London platform, a UK platform, and they got a few awards. For me personally, when I realized how diverse the colors, aromas, and flavors are, you know, Pippa, I couldn't understand why don't we see this. And my journey started about 5.5, nearly 6 years ago. Having said that, I do see a lot more differentiation happening now in selected, you know, sort of deli, sort of small scale artisanal outlets, which is wonderful, but there's huge, huge room still for education. And I wanted to showcase that. You know, it takes a one bee, her lifetime, to produce a 12th of a teaspoon of honey.
I was absolutely shocked to hear that it's that little. When you see it, you just have such respect.
Yeah. A lifetime to produce 1/12 of a teaspoon. And how long is a bee's lifetime?
So the worker bees is between 5 and 7 weeks. You know, when there's a lot of nectar flow and it's windy, etc., you can imagine that their lifespan is shortened. And if you compare that, you know, the male bees are around months, you know, months on end. It varies quite a bit, but they die off as we go into autumn. And then your queen bee can live between 5 and 7 years.
Oh, gosh.
So granted, the worker bees don't live that long, but the amount of energy, you know, that goes into making honey, it really is something sacred. And there is room for your large scale. We've spoken about this often for your commercial honeys. There really is a market for that. But I would like to see these honeys being differentiated, and especially the manner in which we extract it. That information needs to be transparent to the consumer because it can really impact negatively on the honey.
Okay. Right, there's a lot for us to unpack today. Can we just, before we do any unpacking though, ask you about the little golden pin that you are wearing very proudly on your chest there, because that is something very special, isn't it, Natasha?
It is.
I'm telling you, you're not to be modest. I want you to actually let our audience understand just what it took to get that pin.
It was a lot of hard work. I said to Wendy the other day, I still go pinch. Mm-hmm. It is a process. You know, in Italy, I was part of the Honey Judge Guild in South Africa for a few months, and they do fantastic work, and I encourage all our local beekeepers, all beekeepers in South Africa, whether you know, sort of small beekeeper or larger, please enter your honeys in these competitions. But then I discovered this course in Italy, and they are the world leaders in honey sensory analysis. So in essence, you use organoleptic, all your senses, to evaluate a product, in this case honey. So it was the concept was found in France and it was brought into Italy. So I started this journey and, you know, I thought if I can just do one level one, what a privilege that would be. And but the people from all over the world, when they share their honeys, it's just like a bug bites, you know. And I just was determined to, carry on with this. So it took me 4 years because COVID interfered with that process a little bit. And then in November last year, I sat my final exam. It's an elective exam that you can choose to do, and it is a 3-day long exam that was really, really difficult. Some of the tests, we studied 22 unifloral Italian honeys, so only three of them are familiar to my palate, which was sunflower, canola, and citrus, you know, our orange blossom. But our orange blossom is so much more floral and fruity and intense, like our fruit. It's incredible. And yes, so it was 12 students, and five of us passed. I got beaten by Scotland first, and one of our wonderful sensory analysis experts from the USA, you know, a few of us passed, but it was also a bittersweet moment because there were fantastic colleagues that we've walked in. So it was so hard, and one, you know, she wanted to jump it up and down. I could not believe it, but it was hard work. And it is a skill that people can learn, really. I mean, your olfactory receptors sort of renews itself every 100 days. Okay. You know, so it's skills, and I want to part with these skills and so that we can have a panel of honey sensory experts in South Africa.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I've completely lost it. We're supposed to be interviewing.
I know, it's just listening and absorbing all of this knowledge.
Shall we do the tasting?
Yes, I think we should. So let's all shift around to the side. Okay. Let me just describe to our listeners what we are looking at and what we're going to be working through here, and then I'll come and join you over there. Natasha has brought in a set of six glasses that each have inside them a little portion of honey. And looking at them, it's like looking at preparing to do a dessert wine tasting.
Exactly.
With dessert wines that are getting ever more caramelized the longer down the line you go. Because one starts incredibly blonde in color. And by the time we get to glass number six, it's a very, very dark colored, almost sort of chocolatey look to the honey. So let me shift over to the next microphone, and we're going to ask Natasha to explain to us how one goes about tasting honey, and then we'll do our best to try and give you a sense of what we're actually tasting.
Papa, you can join me in my tastings and describe the colors, because you're really good at it. Okay, so the first honey, you will see, the first thing that we do is we observe whether it is granulated, liquid, so it is a visual observation. I'm going to go through this really quite basic and quickly. With wine, you swirl the glass, and that releases the aroma or the nose. But with honey, you smear it on the inside of the glass. I'm tilting it sideways, and I've got a little plastic sort of spoon, which I'm agitating the crystals. And when you do that, you are releasing or agitating the volatile oils, which the bees bring in from the botany. And the volatile oils then releases. The honey that we are tasting here is a cosmos honey with lots of reed nectar in. It is quite heady. It is floral, so the intensity is medium to high. And then we describe the crystals and what we see quite in detail. So in this instance, you can see little air bubbles that's been incorporated through the smearing, obviously. You can, if you hold it up to the light, you can see that there are inconsistent crystals. They're very fine, but you can actually see various different size crystals, right? Now, this spoon is broken, so I'll give you another one.
Okay.
And once you have released, you know, sort of this is a semi-granulated. It's got quite a smooth peanut butter consistency. The color is a light egg yellow, and honeys come in a plethora of hues. Okay, so, Pippa, you put the spoon on your tongue. Mm-hmm. There's a little blob of honey. You allow your saliva to form around the honey. And then you breathe out through your nose, which releases that secondary olfactory. So when we put our nose in the glass, it was quite floral and heady. It turns more fruity, and you will notice it rapidly melts, almost like a fairy just disappearing. And that is very definitive of a honey that's high in glucose. And it gives you actually a cool sensation on. So not meaning it's cold, but that, so there's extra elements. So it's not just the sweet and the sour and all these notes going on, but some honeys have got, is astringent. This honey has got the cooling effect because of the glucose melting.
It's got the color of sort of golden straw or very, very pale blonde hair, if I can put it that way. And the taste, it tastes like a meadow, I want to say. I almost got sort of a hit of sort of grassy, definitely some florally tones, but the first thing I thought of was grass when I tasted it.
Yes, it's interesting. Yes. So it is, if you have a look at our, at the, you've got a
little wheel of
tasting wheel with other foods, and this is from the International Honey Council, and definitely it starts off being quite floral and fruity, mm-hmm. and then it moves into some warm notes. There's also beehive, beeswax, mm-hmm. and definitely, you're right, it also leaves your mouth feeling a bit dry. At the end, like salivating a little bit. And you will go into vegetal notes, which is your dry grass, sort of hay. So,
amazing. The complexity, Wendy, that you wouldn't think when you put a blob on your toast in the morning and go, it's delicious.
I have just discovered, though, that I'm as useless at describing the flavours of honey as I am with wine. Tasting it, I'm like, nice.
Our lecturers said to us when we received all the information before the time, they said, you can practice on wine. I'm like, yes.
Oh, yes, please.
This is the best homework for me.
Ever. Yeah. Now, the next one you've pulled out here is sort of a blonde caramel colour.
So the next one, it is. It's like a very light fudgy color, correct? Mm. And if you have a look at it, the crystals is a lot larger. Do you see that?
Yeah.
And the pastiness, it's thicker. If you would have to smell this honey, there is a little bit of a sort of... The nose is, I just wanted to make sure I've decanted the right one. Yeah. It's a bit cabbagey. It's slightly off-putting.
If you
let me agitate the crystals, this was in the fridge last night, so let's just see.
Just to describe to listeners, it's much more crystalline in structure than the previous one.
And it's grainy. Even to the eye, it looks grainy. So there's a little bit of a mustiness. This is a very rare honey.
Okay.
So there we go, Pippa.
All right. Makes it rare.
It sticks on. I'll tell you what it is. It's a carrot blossom honey. So this farmer grows the carrot flower for seeds. He specifically grows the flowers for seeds. When we say it's a unifloral, okay, this gets not technical. You may get quite a few calls going, oh, no, there's no such thing as carrot blossom honey. It just means, and we don't have, we don't have the funds to test the pollen, et cetera, to say, right, there's so much of this nectar in. So we pretty much go with the beekeeper's experience, but there are many other nectars in. Now, can you feel how some of the fine crystals is very soluble? It disappears. Yes, and then it leaves this sandy, cat-like tongue, right? Grainy. And the other thing is the crystals is not round. It's quite edgy and sharp, almost unpleasant. Now, all honeys granulate, right? So some people think that if a honey granulates, it's a sign that it's a real thing. Unfortunately not, because even if honeys are adulterated, it also granulates. Oh, you know,
we're going to get to that. Some people have these little
tricks that they think are the way to check.
You do this, you do that, and this means it. And most of them.
See if you can get that cabbagey aroma now, because the carrot is from the cabbage family.
I'm getting something veggie-ish. Yes, I don't know if I can quite get to the cabbage.
But I can't get to the cabbage, but.
But I love the. I actually like that lingering crystal on the tongue.
Yeah, the apiary is on the other side. Close to Hopefield. The next one. So from there, we're going to move all the way to the garden route. And we have got here a... Oh, I should get away from the mic. So this one that we're going to taste is sort of the same color, right? Mm. It's light amber. You can also see the different granule sizes, but it's a lot finer than the one we've just tasted, but a bit more coarser than the cosmos and wildflower and sort of weed nectar we've had. It is, so the nose on this one is quite resinous, but also it's warm. You get like chai spices.
Oh, cool. Taste this one.
And ideally you want to sort of also warm up a honey, you know. So
I was going to ask, am I allowed to handle the glass? I know, for example, if you were tasting white wine, it would be a no-no to put your wrap your hands around it.
Yes.
Is it okay to do that with honey?
You melt it down a bit. We actually each should have cupped a glass of honey before we take it. So there is there's some strong vegetal notes. There's also some resinous notes. And then at the end, it's got a finish almost like a burnt, cabriolet. Cream brulee.
A burnt sugar sense to it,
It's got, and it lingers, and then all of a sudden it just sort of disappears. Mm. But it is, there's a lot going on. It's quite a complex honey.
That is gorgeous.
But it's almost, it's a famous,
No, you said this is from the garden route.
Yes, from the garden route, And you know, there's so many species in our book. We actually, I think there's over 9,000 species, is it? Sorry, I'm under correction, for fynbos. But the fynbos is really difficult to get a unifloral because there's so many things that, that nectars at the same.
Now, just while we're lining up the next one, with one eye on the clock, I know we need to rush through a little bit. Just to anybody who's come in late to the conversation today, with me in studio, besides Wendy Noda, we have Natasha Lyon, who is this country's first internationally trained honey sommelier. She is taking us through a honey tasting, and you'll hear the kind of terminology being used is very much like a wine tasting.
Very much like wine.
And the origin of the honey, the granulation of the honey, the colouring is so different on each of them. If ever you needed proof that honey is not honey is not honey, that they come in immense diverse ranges, you would look at the table we're looking at now.
Absolutely.
For example, the one we're about to taste is much more liquid and looks much,
no
much finer. There's no sign of granulation at all looking at this one, and you are shining a light through it, and there's little bit of crystals at the bottom there, but
and the reason I'm doing that is this honey is definitive of showing up a red hue. It's a buffalo thorn. Highly sought after. It's believed to be quite high in medicinal properties, minerals, etc. So the color of honey is contributed, both the pollen and the minerals in the soil contribute to the color of honey.
I think so we should have said these are all your honeys, right?
It is. No, I work with beekeepers.
Okay.
I work with them for quite a while before I
Thank you.
Have to twist quickly.
Okay.
Because it's quite much more liquid than the others. It's got a silky feeling. And we've skipped the nose now, but often people smell it, Papa, they go, oh, not keen on the smell. It's a very definitive.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And then it turns sort of caramelly.
I can taste condensed milk.
I was going to say it's like the outside of a toffee apple.
Yes, and then it's got that bitter finish again.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Like an unexpected. And there's some balsamic. The next honey, I know we pushed for time, but this one we have to taste.
Okay.
It is called a honeydew honey. So it's something that's quite new to South Africa in that we are not chasing this type of honey because consumers don't really know, we can't get the premium price for what it takes. But in essence, it is made from aphids that excretes, they puncture the plant, suck out the minerals and all the good, you know, and then the excretions is a form of a sugary substance which is collected by bees, pollinators and ants. This we sort of stumbled upon, but this
aphid
is
honey.
Your mind will do a 180 on the nose. I mean, it is. I should have warmed it up a little bit.
Oh, wow. It's almost got a Marmite-y tang to it.
You are good at
this.
I just
really
got a whiff of Marmite when I bump my nose.
I
wish
I said that, but now that you said
and
it,
I promise, the listeners probably think we've rehearsed this, but honestly, Pippa got this. I mean, Bovril Marmite-y.
Okay.
And it is typical of a...
my goodness.
It is a proper savory honey, meaty. It's got animal notes. It's almost a bit barnyard to the nose, you know, after that meaty sort of Bovril Marmite.
Wow.
You have to taste that.
Oh, that's so complex.
Oh, dear. And then what I love about this honey is it's got a balsamic. It's like balsamic-y. It is incredible. Now, in honey, the only reason I recognize this is because one of the honeys we study in Italy is fir honeydew honey and Metcalf honey. Now, remember, it's majority nectars that does not come from flowers. So it comes from excretions from aphids. And I recognized it immediately.
Me neither. Yeah.
There are thousands of different little aphids. So this is quite something.
That is, I mean, a savory honey. Yes. Okay.
I would never have imagined such a thing.
So who knew that you could get honey from aphid excretions? I've learned something new today, for starters. With us in studio today, not only Wendy Noda, our consumer ninja, but also Natasha Lyon, who is South Africa's first internationally trained honey sommelier. She is a beekeeper, a bee guardian, and the founder of Lyon Raw Artisan Honey. And I love this comment that somebody has made listening to us before the break, taking a taste of those different kinds of honeys. The comment is, the complexity of honey makes me feel guilty for merely spreading it on my toast. Lovely message in from Jenny in Obs as well, saying, I have some very rare honey. Can you imagine that on the little island of St. Helena in the mid-Atlantic, there are bees making honey?
Wow.
There are bees making honey all over the world, aren't they, Natasha? But not always doing as well as we'd like them to.
Yes, absolutely, Papa. We've got also different, you know, species of honeybees. In South Africa, we've got two subspecies, Apis mellifera capensis here in the Cape and Apis mellifera scutellata. And yes, unfortunately, because of the huge pressure on pollinating our food sources, they have been domesticated to be the key pollinator because we can move them around and we can manipulate, you know, sort of the pollination. So they are sort of trucked into all these different orchards, etc., and often exposed to chemicals. However, we need to be mindful that the reason we do have our food in the volumes that we have is because of these pest control, you know, sort of substances. Yeah. So we need to try and move it to be more, you know, pollinator friendly, and provide the sort of ecosystem that lessens the exposure of these chemicals to our bees. But it's very difficult. Here in the Western Cape, we are really, really struggling with food for our honeybees. The entire fruit and veg export is dependent on the honeybee pollination currently.
Yeah.
And what has led to this dire situation? I mean, I imagine it's been a long time coming, but where we sit now, what is the main cause of that and what's been done about it?
You know, Wendy, I think in essence, I mean, it's the good old explosion of population, you know, and I think the way that we produce food this large scale is simply not sustainable. So there's a lot of, you know, pockets of research and projects all over the world where they're trying to go back to biodiversity, you know, trying to incorporate the other pollinators that pollinate our food as well. What has really made the problem a lot worse in the Western Cape specifically is, of course, our eucalyptus trees, which is not indigenous to South Africa. There's about 200 species. In Australia, there's about 900 species, and we know that some of these trees are quite thirsty. Mm. SANBI, South African National Biodiversity Institution, have done a new little booklet they've just updated that lists specific trees we are allowed to cut under certain circumstances. Now, why is this such an important thing? The eucalyptus is the single most important foraging food for bees. So the nectar, which we value in, you know, nectar N123, there's a book by Martin Johannesmeyer, beautiful book on bee plants of South Africa, and then the pollen is also marked P123. So the eucalyptus trees is some of the highest food sources available to our capensis bees. And if they don't have the sustainable diet between these pollination, then we cannot keep the populations going. But there's also a concern, what is the impact on biodiversity, you know? Yeah. And so part of the proceeds of our book is going towards WWF, as they're working on a bee and pollinator project for biodiversity and conservation around these issues, because we really have to do something about that.
Natasha, while we're talking about the book, won't you tell our listeners a little bit more about it, please?
Yes, it sort of started as a passion project. My friend Sharon Krause is a photographer, and you know, Papa, she have taken over 14,000 photos over the past sort of 4 years, and her photos just got better and better. Mm-hmm. And then she got given a macro lens from her husband, and one day I said to her, we need to show these photos to people. And so the idea for the book evolved. So she selected photos from those 14,000 photos that she'd taken. The idea was to use the form of art, Papa. We've got these amazing PhD students, unbelievable scientific research, right? But we don't put it in a vehicle for Mr. Public to understand these challenges we are facing, because really, insects is boring, right? I mean, insects, everybody knows the bee, but beyond that, really. So we tried to do a photographic art book, and it is all about the honeybee and what she may encounter on her foraging flight. Oh, so there's just tiny little flower spiders that change color. There's a fantastic photo of a praying mantis, because it's one of the bee's predators. It's quite gory, actually. We were saying it should be put like an age, you know, sort of warning on that page. Yes, and then I wrote the book. It took us about 4.5 years, and then we tried to look for a partner where we can, you know, where part of the proceeds can go to benefit biodiversity and all the pollinators.
So WWF is that, and if somebody wants to find a copy, Natasha, what's the title and where would they look for it?
The book is called The Honeybee Takes Flight. We've just launched, we've self-published in November. So funds was an issue, but there's a limited print. In Cape Town, you can get it at Dalewood Cheese from our website, www.lionraw.co.za, or, you know, get in touch with me on Instagram, Lion Roar. Currently, it's only there's a few going to a book. It's gone off to Speer, and a few of the other wine farms have shown interest because there's a lot of them that are registered with WWF. You know, so it's a book that beautifully can sit on your coffee table alongside the Big Five, etc., and educate. There's a conservation message.
Fantastic, and that's the whole purpose of the segment today. One of the things we do need to educate listeners on is the fact that not all honey as presented on the shelf is created equal. Yes. Wendy, let's talk a little bit more about adulteration.
So I first want to, for us to talk a bit about the myths. People have very strong ideas about how you can tell real honey from adulterated honey. And there are a number, if you Google it, I mean, these come from what would appear to be quite good sources. You know, they're published by news organizations. So the one is you place a small drop of honey on a sheet of paper towel. Pure honey will not leave a noticeable wet marks and won't be absorbed rapidly. And if the honey is, it could be indicative of adulteration, possibly adding added water, or fill a glass with water. This is the one I hear most often. And add a teaspoon of honey. Stir it once. If the honey is pure, it will settle at the bottom and won't dissolve. It may form a lump or settle down. Adulterated honey may dissolve and create a cloudy appearance. I know what you're going to say, but please, for our listeners, is there any merit in any of these, or is lab testing the only way to know kind of for sure?
Wendy, it is really lab testing, unfortunately. The methods of adulteration is so sophisticated. I mean, they are even adding one of the B enzymes is called invertase. That's responsible for breaking down complex sugars into simple sugars. They are even adding invertase to the honey. So, unfortunately, laboratory test. It is true that some honeys that's got really heavy, thick consistencies, if you do that, drop it in the water, it sits there for a while before stirring. But really, there is no tricks that
hard
you
and fast.
Can authenticate. Mm. Unfortunately not. The best thing is to find your local beekeeper and ask key questions from them.
Well,
that will help
you. Let's run through those questions because I think, you know, we were here to educate and arm our listeners with you know, these sort of tricks, real tricks. Ask these questions.
What should be asked?
So I think, you know, to give a more sort of overview, we produce round about 1,800, let's say 2,000 tons of honey in South Africa per annum. Our consumption is around about 5,000. So you can see there's a huge shortfall.
And it needs to come from elsewhere.
So we're importing honey. So on the label, as soon as it's different countries, please understand it doesn't mean the honey's adulterated. Okay, we don't know that. There is a market for squeezy bottles where the honey is heated to 60 degrees because that deters granulation, because mom's in a hurry, you want to squeeze quickly for the breakfast and off you go. But unfortunately, the plastic bottles is not ideal to retain all the properties for a honey that's been heated. And there's a lot of plastic bottles where people are mixing honeys literally in their garage. It is one of the most adulterated products currently. SABIES have got their hands full, South African Bee Industry Organization. So definitely, if you're looking for a pure local honey and it says all these different, it means it's been blended. Blended means, theoretically, different honeys blended together, not necessarily adulterated, okay?
If I could just jump in there, because people talk to me a lot about the labelling issue, and the reason that our local legislation allows for it is that you can't, because, you know, there's seasonality, there's supply issues, and so it was to allow the producer to have one label, not print a new one for every different blend that they happen to have. So it can say from... And then and or, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
South Africa say and China, Portugal, whatever.
Nigeria, Ghana.
It could be, it could be that there's none of any of them or none of South African or whatever. Mm. It doesn't mean it's necessarily adulterated, but it should put a question mark there, certainly when it comes to China, because I know the bee authorities say, according to the number of bees in the world and what the bees can put out, if you look at Chinese figures on what and the honey they're producing, it's not, the two don't marry up. The bees can't possibly produce that amount of honey on their own without some help in the form of sugars.
Absolutely, Wendy. And I mean, you've done a few articles on adulteration. You know, it's so hard to, I think the key thing for, you know, if a mum or person you want to get the best for your family, ask key questions.
Yes,
is the honey heated? Okay. If so, to what temperature? All honeys are not equal. Okay. So we've established there is a market for your commercial honeys. And they're doing that for the reason you can't pump the honeys through your factory of a plant, you know, unless you have heated it for it not to granulate. So that's understandable. Honey should be heated to around about 40 degrees maximum, not to impact on, for instance, the bee enzymes, which is amino acids. There's a lot of other properties in honey that is heat sensitive. Also ask if you can get your retailers and people put pressure on them. Some of the big retailers starting to differentiate. Where does the honey come from in geographical areas? So we've spoken about the security around apiaries, you know, the theft, the vandalism, it's a huge, huge problem.
Gosh.
So beekeepers are very reluctant to give the exact location, understandably.
Yeah.
But you can say it is, you know, a fynbos from Stillby's area or, you know, up in George, or you can say it's a West Coast. So I encourage beekeepers to start differentiating. Customers love your stories. Talk about that. Share the botanical footprint. If you ask a beekeeper, where's the honey from? And they, well, then, did you buy it from someone else? Do you know the source? How's the honey treated? Wendy, all honeys are not equal. Okay. Yet, we are expecting to pay the same price for all honeys.
Mm.
Your commercial honeys is often from pollinator. You know, you bring in, let's say, your hives to pollinate the canola, etc., or sunflower or macadamia, all these large crops. The main income usually is your services that you give as a pollinator. The honey is almost a sideline.
Mm.
That honey is taken to the honey plants that they manufacture or, you know, process the honey, heated, and they try and blend it together, because I think it's from the old school honey judging methods where the clarity of the honey got really high marks.
Right.
But the reality is that if we over filter these honeys, some of them are filtered to 60 degrees, pushed through like almost coffee sort of, you know, that even removes the pollen. Mm. So by the EU definition of honey, that is no longer honey, because you've removed even the pollen that is innately in that botanical footprint.
Has all the wonderful medicinal
properties. So it's complex. It really is. And I must mention to you that this weekend there's a honey festival.
I'm so glad you brought that up. It's the Big Buzz Honey Festival at Laurensford this
weekend. Yes, in Laurensford.
Yes.
So it's a wonderful venue. We're super excited.
And
please support
three
our beekeepers.
Days.
Yeah, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's also the Western Cape Beekeeping Association. It's their annual meeting, etc. They've got some speakers. And you can book, you can go onto their website or Instagram, you can book different, I know some of them are unfortunately booked up, but then there is a beautiful honey and lunch pairing. So last year we looked at that, and this is something close to my heart. I work often with chefs, they get the flavor and aroma, and I would select seasonal honeys, describe the flavors and aroma, give ideas for pairing, but then it's really up to the chef. So unfortunately with this one, I wasn't involved with this one. And so this is a lunch with that they're going to put together with a chef. And Papa, I think there's still seats available. And there was talk that they may only do a second one for Sunday.
Fantastic. So you want to just look, the easiest thing, because it's free to go in, but you do need to book. So the best thing to do is just Google Big Buzz Honey Festival, and you'll find the link through to the page to fill out the form to reserve your space. And as Natasha's mentioned, demonstrations, panel discussions, beekeeping advice, everything and anything you can imagine to do with honey, from Friday to Sunday, 9 till 1 at Laurensford Estate this very weekend. Natasha, lots and lots of questions coming in on our WhatsApp line. You've addressed the issue of how to test whether honey is genuine. Fiona, thank you for that. Somebody also bemoaning, I love our local honey, but there is just so much fake stuff around. Some of it is barely honey-flavoured syrup. And yeah, I think a lot of people will agree with that. Can you bring in bees from other countries, asks one of our listeners, and mix them with South African bees to make honey?
Bring the other bees into South Africa? No, we can't do that at all. And the reason is that, you know, you need to protect your bees because of bee diseases, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And also our capensis bees have got an ability, and we explained it all in the book, with haploid and diploid. So they can actually lay fertilized eggs, and they've got the capacity to take over other apiaries. Why there's a line in our country round about an oat swirring. We call it the integration. Got a lovely map in the book, but it explains why, you know, the capensis cannot go into school. scutellata. So absolutely not. There's a lot of talk. You know, Australia often imports kinds of pollinators and, you know, stingless bees have been, you know, sort of exported between countries, etc. But no, that's not ideal. That won't, for biodiversity.
And then you've obviously made Daywood feel a bit inspired here, because he's written in to say, I live in the southern suburbs and I've got 10 pomegranate trees, all of them organic and huge and fruit bearing. I have a beehive in my wall. Is it safe to harvest the honey?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, what was quite interesting is for your large-scale pollinating honeys, they had that tested at the Apomondia. Mm-hmm. And then a few years ago, the competition, almost 40% of those honeys was disqualified because of the chemicals in it.
Gosh.
But yes, it is, I would say it is safe. Look, the bees are the ultimate alchemists. I believe honey, first and foremost, is medicine for us. You know, they mix all these different nectars, etc. together. But it is something you need to be mindful of, you know, especially I'm now diverting a bit from the question, but the bees can fly between 5 and 7, even up to 10 kilometers from the hive. I mean, that little insect.
A tiny thing.
So that's why you're not really sure exactly of where they forage from. And that's why sometimes you'll say, this is a multiflora from this geographical area, from the Free State or the Klein Karoo or different, sort of geographical areas. So we in South Africa, most of our honeys, this is important to remember, is really multiflora. In Italy, they've got these 22 uniflorals that we studied, but we have got 9 different biomes. I mean, it is mind-blowing. And I encourage people, you know, find your local beekeepers and go and find those gems.
Mm,
yeah.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
I believe we've got a question that's come through as a voice note. Let's take a quick listen to that.
Hi, Papa. Could you please ask your guest, how do we differentiate between a good honey and a bad honey? Do we look at the color? I need some education because I love honey. Thank you.
We could probably spend 2 hours on that question
answering
alone.
That question, yeah. Yes. I like to use the analogy, and it sounds like I'm bailing out of this question, but, you know, how do you know good wine from a wine that's not that good? You know, so I would encourage everybody to taste different honeys straight from the beekeeper if you can. You really do get a good idea. And you know, although there's no form of saying, oh, this is adulterated, sometimes we taste something and we go, oh, that's not. Unfortunately, with color, you know, color is an expression of the botanical footprint. So it's got no indication whatsoever on the quality
so
of the
glad
honey.
We've dealt with that because I think a lot of people do make assumptions about the color of honey, which are totally off.
Yes, and they're also welcome to send questions to Lion Raw's website. I really try and answer, and if I don't know, I'd like to go and I like to go and research it myself because that's how I learn as well. Let's try all different colors. You cannot look at a honey and say this is better than that.
As someone who makes honey, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you this question. For a 500 gram jar or bottle of honey, for a good honey, what would you expect to pay? Because this is a big problem that the local producers have, is that you're competing with a lot of stuff that's been blended, imported, whatever, with sometimes dubious backgrounds, shall we say. So price, it can't be the ultimate tell, but do you have some guidelines around the issue of price?
You know, it's very difficult, Wendy. After COVID, we saw a lot of the honeys, just the pricing got really high, you know, 280 rand a jar, because then people go, oh, well, at least I know that then is the real honey. So unfortunately, it's been very, but what I can tell you is you cannot, in my view, and I've done the costs, and this is on a small artisanal beekeeper. I'm not talking pollination, right? You cannot keep bees financially that it makes any sense for under 120 to 130 rand a bottle. Honestly.
Okay. Well, how big is the bottle?
And this is this 500 grams. Okay. So, and I promise you, I can imagine people doing flick flocker out there now going, what is she saying? But you know, you have got a lot of hobbyist beekeepers that's got 1 or 2 hives. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden they've got this bumper harvest. Now every family member, the children's, the teachers all got a little gift, but they've got a lot of honey. So they go off to the local market, but it's not their main income. And they flock it for 60, 70 rand a jar. You know, so well done the Mr. Public that snaps up that absolute gem.
Yeah.
But the guys who depends on this income cannot survive on that. And what we're going to be left with is pollinating honeys and these artisanal you know, guys are disappearing. We don't really have youngsters coming into it. In fact, one of the talks this weekend is on attracting young talent and attracting youngsters into this beekeeping industry.
Natasha, I think if we could clone you and send one of you to every corner of the country, we would have masses of people coming into the industry because you've made it come alive in such a wonderful way. And the passion you have for our local honey and promoting it and shouting to the world how good it can be is just so infectious. Thank you very, very much for joining us today. You've mentioned your website several times. Can we just finish by repeating that? Because I'm sure, I haven't touched on half of the questions that came in from our listeners. If they'd like to direct them to you directly, where do they go?
It's www.lionraw.co.za.
What a clever name.
Lion Roar. Oh, not a lion roar.
The lion, the insect, the bee is like the roaring insect of all the insects.
Love it. LYONRAW, lionroar.co.za, or follow her at Lion Roar on Instagram. Thank you so much for the wonderful tasting and for sharing so much of your knowledge with us today. South Africa's first internationally qualified honey sommelier. It's been an absolute treat to have you with us today, and
thank
all the
you,
best
Papa.
To you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's really been a privilege for me. Thank you.
It's really been fascinating as well as delicious. Marmite scented honey is going to be one of my favorite new discoveries of the year.